We often don't think about the electricity grid, do we?
Not really,
It's
no.
just that invisible backbone kind of humming silently, powering our entire modern world. But what if this incredibly complex system could not only sense trouble before it strikes, but maybe even heal itself? Or, let your smart appliances play a role in preventing widespread blackouts.
That's the direction things are heading.
Today, our deep dive is all about pulling back the curtain on the transformative pathways to a more stable, resilient, and, intelligent power grid.
Sounds good.
We've taken a comprehensive report, one originally prepared for industry executives, actually, and it distills insights from cutting-edge research, European policy documents, and some real-world case studies from transmission system operators, TSOs, like Energinet.
Yeah, some really practical stuff in there.
So our mission for you, the listener, is to give you a shortcut to being truly well-informed, extracting the most important nuggets of knowledge so you can quickly grasp the transformative future of energy and its fascinating implications.
Just do it.
So let's unpack this. Okay, imagine you're a transmission system operator, a TSO. You're tasked with keeping the lights on for an entire country. You're facing, immense pressure.
Huge pressure.
How do you integrate massive volumes of variable renewable energy, like wind and solar,
Tricky.
deal with increasing disturbances from things like extreme weather, all while keeping costs in check?
Yeah, the balancing act.
And maybe the biggest balancing act of all,
Yeah.
reliably keeping the lights on while simultaneously achieving these really ambitious decarbonization goals.
It sounds almost impossible, doesn't it?
It sounds like a tightrope walk in a hurricane.
It truly is a monumental challenge. And the report identifies five key strategic pathways that are, absolutely crucial for improving grid stability.
Okay, what are they?
So these are really embracing AI and advanced simulation, developing what we call digital twins,
Digital twins, okay.
activating flexibility. And yes, that actually includes you, people, as potential resources,
Interesting.
investing in robust data and common standards, like a shared language,
Right.
and finally, undergoing a profound people and process transformation within these TSO organizations themselves.
So it's tech, data, and people.
Exactly. And what's crucial to understand is that these areas aren't isolated. They're deeply interdependent. They form a truly holistic roadmap for the future grid.
It sounds like a total overhaul, really. So, faced with these monumental challenges, where do TSOs even begin?
Well, the report points to a clear roadmap, starting with a powerful suite of emerging technologies that are not just theoretical, they're actually already beginning to revolutionize how we manage the grid.
Okay, let's dive into some of the most exciting ones then.
Absolutely. One of the biggest game changers is AI-powered simulation and forecasting.
Right, AI always comes up.
It does. Advanced machine learning is completely changing how we predict complex systems. Think weather or how electricity will flow. A prime example is Google DeepMind's GraphCast model.
GraphCast.
Yeah. This isn't just some new weather app. It's a sophisticated graph neural network. Get this. It delivers 10-day global weather forecasts more accurately, and here's the kicker, dramatically faster.
How much
We're
faster?
talking mere seconds compared to traditional physics-based supercomputer models that take hours.
Seconds versus hours. Wow.
Huge difference. And for TSOs, this directly translates to massive benefits. Imagine getting much better wind and solar output predictions.
Right, which helps integrate renewables.
Exactly. Integrate more of them, more efficiently. Or proactively preparing for extreme weather events like cyclones or heat waves days earlier than
Days
before.
earlier. That's a significant boost to resilience, surely.
Absolutely. And it goes beyond weather, too. DeepMind's fluid dynamics machine learning shows that similar graph neural simulators can run physical grid simulations anywhere from 100 to, even 10,000 times faster.
10,000 times.
Yeah. Imagine near-instant, real-time contingency analysis understanding what-if scenarios in a flash.
So, what if this power line goes down? Yeah, instantly.
Pretty much. And you get optimized control recommendations. This fundamentally changes how quickly a TSO can react and make decisions.
That level of speed sounds almost unimaginable for grid operations. What does that mean for how quickly TSOs can react to a major incident?
Well, it shifts them from reacting to a problem
Right.
to proactively managing it, often before it even becomes a crisis. It's like giving the grid a whole new nervous system, as you said.
That's a great analogy.
And the benefits are tangible. We're seeing AI already cutting operating costs, for instance, by optimizing energy reserves.
Okay.
One trial even showed AI wind forecasting increased the energy market value by roughly 20%.
20%. That isn't just a number. That fundamentally shifts the economics of renewables, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Makes them more competitive, more stable.
Which is a massive acceleration for decarbonization. Okay, so AI gives us a better crystal ball for the grid.
In a sense, yes.
But what if we could not only predict future events, but also test solutions in a virtual sandbox before ever touching the real grid?
Ah, now you're talking about the digital twin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What exactly is a digital twin, and how is it such a game changer for grid operators?
So a digital twin is essentially a high-fidelity virtual replica of the physical grid.
A copy.
A very detailed live copy. It's continuously updated in real time with sensor data from the actual grid.
Okay, live data feeding into it.
Precisely. So think of it as a dynamic sandbox where operators can safely simulate and test actions like rerouting power before applying them in the real world.
Like a flight simulator for the grid.
That's a perfect analogy, a constantly updated practice grid.
Okay, so what are the benefits?
Oh, they're profound. For robustness and resilience, it enables what you might call a self-healing grid.
Self-healing? How?
The twin can run automated contingency analyses, those what-if scenarios, and suggest, or sometimes even automatically execute, corrective actions in split seconds. Operators get advanced warning of problems. They can rehearse remedial actions virtually. It really prepares the grid for extreme events.
That makes sense.
What else? Well, for maximizing infrastructure and efficiency, it allows dynamic optimization. Basically, wringing more capacity from existing equipment.
How does that work?
For example, by integrating something called dynamic line rating data.
Dynamic line rating.
Yeah, it tells you the actual safe capacity of a power line based on real-time conditions like wind and temperature. On a hot, windy day, you might be able to safely push more power through.
Instead of just using a fixed, conservative limit.
Exactly. So the digital twin can use this data to safely increase transfer capacity, potentially deferring the need for new, very costly line builds.
So it saves money on infrastructure.
Big time.
Wow.
One European TSO reported cutting dispatch costs significantly just through better predictions from their partial digital twin. It helped them understand the grid's true capacity moment to moment.
Okay, resilience, efficiency.
Yeah.
What about the green transition?
It helps there, too. It helps integrate renewable plants and storage more effectively. And it can even evaluate if certain market interventions might alleviate grid constraints.
So it informs policy.
Yeah, it can inform market design and regulatory policy. It's really powerful. Now, full TSO-wide AI-driven twins are still emerging.
But it's early days for the full vision.
But partial twins exist, and Europe explicitly envisions a pan-European grid twin as a strategic goal.
A digital twin of the entire European grid.
Very.
Okay, that's incredibly powerful, almost like that crystal ball we mentioned, but for the operators.
Oh.
But what does this mean for you listening at home, an energy consumer? Can your smart devices actually help stabilize the grid?
Absolutely. This is where demand response, or DR, platforms and flexibility markets come into play.
Demand response.
So demand response is basically about adjusting consumption patterns, either directly by customers.
Like me turning down my thermostat.
Yes, or via automation in response to grid needs or maybe price signals.
Yep.
Think of it this way. Instead of building a massive, expensive new power plant just to meet peak demand for a few hours a year,
right,
we can ask consumers or businesses to slightly reduce their usage or maybe shift it to a different time when the grid is strained.
And aggregators play a role here.
Exactly. Aggregators can sort of marshal these distributed resources. Think EV chargers, smart thermostats, even industrial processes to provide crucial grid services, like balancing supply and demand.
So my EV charger could actually help the grid.
Potentially, yes. By charging at off-peak times or even pausing charging for a short while during a critical peak, the impact is significant.
How significant?
Well, studies in Texas, for instance, showed DR can enhance reliability of the grid and significantly reduce price volatility in wholesale markets.
Less price volatility is good for everyone.
Definitely. And the European Commission estimates that leveraging this demand-side flexibility could save up to $5 billion per year in avoided grid investments.
5 billion euros a year.
That's the estimate. They famously call it achieving more flex, less copper.
More flexibility, fewer costly power lines. Makes sense.
Exactly. And there's a strong regulatory push, too. New EU frameworks, like the Network Code on Demand Response, are standardizing how these flexibility providers participate across markets. It requires TSOs and DSOs, the distribution operators, to adapt their systems.
So the rules are catching up with the technology.
They are. It means a more resilient, more economical system that really maximizes the infrastructure we already have. It's a win-win, really.
That's a huge economic incentive.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about these incredible technologies, AI, digital twins, even how your smart home can be a player.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you make sure all these different systems, all these moving parts, actually connect and, you know, speak the same language?
Ah, you've hit on the absolute bedrock, the silent foundation for everything else.
Which is?
Robust information management.
Okay, sounds maybe a bit dry, but essential.
Absolutely essential. It means having a structured, consistent approach to defining, storing, linking, and governing all that grid data. It's all about avoiding chaos and implementing a single source of truth philosophy.
One version of the truth for everyone.
Exactly. And this starts with unified data models and standards. These are like the common languages for grid data.
Like technical dictionaries?
Kind of. We're talking about things like the Common Information Model, or CIM. And its European profile, CGMES, which is used for power system models. And then there's IEC 61850 for real-time substation data.
Okay, CIM and IEC 61850.
Think of CIM as maybe the detailed blueprints and design specifications for a building.
Right.
While IEC 61850 is like the real-time communication system for the construction workers actually on the site using walkie-talkies.
Oh, okay. Planning versus real-time operation.
Exactly. These standards ensure every system planning tools, control systems, market platforms refers to the same object definitions. A specific transformer is called the same thing everywhere.
Which makes integration simpler.
Much simpler, and it reduces errors massively. In Europe, CGMES is even mandated for TSO model exchanges. It's not optional.
So the benefits are interoperability, that single source of truth.
And reduced manual effort, fewer mistakes. We've seen concrete examples like Germany's Amprion using CIM to automate links between systems, save them a lot of hassle.
Right.
And Norway's Statnett built a CIM-based knowledge graph of its entire power system.
A knowledge graph. That sounds almost like building a brain for the grid's data. Can you simplify that a bit more for us?
Absolutely. Imagine building like a Google Maps for all the grid's data.
Okay.
It doesn't just know where a substation is, but it understands how it's connected to every single line, sensor, control system, market participant, everything.
So it knows the relationships between things.
Exactly. And it allows the grid systems, or AI, to sort of reason about these relationships automatically. It makes data incredibly flexible and discoverable, which is crucial for advanced AI applications.
Got it. And managing this needs tools.
Yeah, data catalog tools are crucial for managing this complexity. And there's also the practical, but really crucial need for consistent metadata and asset identification.
Like unique ID tags for everything.
Precisely. Using standardized identifiers like ENT's RE, EIC codes, or CIM's MRAD for every single asset and data point across all systems. This supports traceability and automation, knowing exactly what data belongs to what piece of equipment.
Seems fundamental.
It is. And this brings us to what's really the frontier right now. Linking the IEC 61850 world, that real-time operational data from substations.
Well, walkie-talkie chatter.
Right, with the CIM world, the planning and analytical models, the blueprints.
Connecting the blueprints to the real-time action.
Exactly. Bringing them together means the architects can instantly see what the builders are doing and vice versa. This linkage is absolutely essential for a truly dynamic digital twin and for advanced AI applications to have accurate, real-time context.
Makes sense.
And this raises an important point. Without first getting information management right, without these common languages, these standards, a unified data strategy,
yeah,
any attempt to deploy AI or sophisticated digital platforms will just flounder. It's the classic garbage in, garbage out problem.
Right. If the data isn't good, the AI won't be either.
Exactly. But with a solid data foundation, everything else accelerates.
Okay, so if that's the foundation, what's happening right at the very edge of the grid, down in the substations themselves, is stuff changing there too?
Oh, absolutely. At that level, things like IEC 61850-based digital substations are a big deal.
Digital substations?
Yeah, along with phaser measurement units, PMUs, which give super fast high-resolution grid measurements and various other IoT sensors, they're truly digitalizing field operations.
So less analog, more digital data coming out.
Much more detailed real-time data. And it also means TSOs can configure equipment remotely much more efficiently than, you know, sending crews out in trucks to physical locations for every adjustment.
Saves time and money. What about stability?
For grid stability, this is vital. Richer data and more automation right at the substation level mean faster and smarter responses to local events.
Like what?
Like, say, reconfiguring power flows in milliseconds to isolate a fault or reroute power around a problem area.
Milliseconds. That's fast.
Very fast. It also enables much easier integration of distributed energy resources, or DERs, things like rooftop solar or local batteries connected to the distribution network.
It helps manage those smaller local energy sources.
Exactly. Essentially, this modernization is upgrading the grid's nervous system at the edges, feeding much better real-time intelligence up to those higher-level AI and digital twin platforms we just discussed.
Okay, so we've covered the incredible technology, AI, twins, DR, standard sensors.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned earlier, technology is only one piece of the puzzle. And often, maybe not even the hardest piece.
That's often true.
What about the human element? How do TSOs need to evolve their teams, their workflows, to actually leverage these powerful new tools effectively?
Yeah, this is absolutely critical. It requires a profound cultural and organizational evolution, not just buying new software.
So on the people side?
On the people side, it's about creating new roles or maybe formalizing existing ones. For example, establishing a data governance council.
A council?
Yeah, like a cross-departmental committee that sets the overall data strategy and policies, and designating specific data owners and data stewards for different data domains like network models or market data. They become responsible for the quality and reliability of that data from the ground up.
So clear ownership of data quality.
Absolutely. It also means broadening the workforce skills beyond classical power engineering.
Need more data scientists.
Definitely. Data science, AI expertise, software development skills. This can involve hiring new people, but also, crucially, upskilling existing staff.
How do you do that?
Through things like internal assignment user groups, pilot projects where traditional operators collaborate directly with data scientists, you know, learning by doing. We might even see totally new roles emerge, like a digital twin engineer, someone who blends operational knowledge with deep data expertise.
Interesting. But change can be hard.
Extremely. Change management is absolutely critical. Leadership has to clearly communicate that this technology augments human capabilities. It doesn't just replace people.
Building trust is key.
Exactly. That requires transparency, especially with AI tools. Operators need to understand, at some level, how they work. And celebrating successes, showing the benefits, involving the end users, the operators, early in the design process is vital too. And adopting more agile ways of working because the tech evolves so fast.
So people and culture are huge.
Yeah.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, how do the actual processes within a TSO need to evolve for this digital future?
Precisely. The process changes are what ensure these innovations get integrated securely and efficiently into the day-to-day reality operations, maintenance, planning.
Okay, like what kind of processes?
Well, formal processes for managing data quality, consistency, and reconciliation. For example, making sure the real-time SCADA measurements from the control room actually align with the long-term planning models used by engineers. That sounds basic, but it's often a challenge.
I can imagine.
It also means establishing clear standard operating procedures, SOPs, for things like data updates, validation checks, and metadata management, knowing where data came from, how reliable it is.
Getting the data housekeeping in order.
Exactly. Another huge shift is IT/OT integration.
Information technology and operations technology.
Right. Traditionally, the IT department managing business systems and the OT department managing the real-time grid control systems were quite separate, often for security reasons.
Different worlds.
Very different worlds. Now, processes must be built for them to work closely together in tandem. Adopting a DevOps approach is key here.
DevOps, like in software development?
Exactly. It means IT developers and OT engineers collaborate seamlessly on deploying and maintaining systems. Think faster updates, more reliable rollouts. It means breaking down those traditional walls so they can build and manage these new complex grid systems together.
Makes sense for faster innovation. What else?
Well, because so many changes involve the distribution networks where homes and businesses connect, TSO-DSO coordination becomes vital.
Transmission and distribution operators working together.
Yes. This means new processes for coordinating things like flexibility services from EVs or homes, establishing joint TSO-DSO procedures, data sharing agreements, maybe via a shared data platform or a data hub. Mm. A recent joint report from ESOE and the EU DSO entity basically said collaboration between system operators has never been more critical.
They have to work together.
They absolutely have to. And of course, underpinning all of this, cybersecurity and risk management must be front and center.
Can't forget that.
No way. This includes robust incident response plans, regular security audits, lots of employee training, and strict compliance with regulations like the EU's NIS2 directive for critical infrastructure.
Security has to be built in from the start.
Yes. Security by design needs to be integrated into all new projects. And crucially, any AI model decisions that directly affect the physical grid must be validated, they need to be explainable, and there have to be clear fallback procedures if the AI fails or gives a bad recommendation.
Human oversight is still key.
Absolutely. And finally, TSOs need a process for continuous improvement and innovation, like institutionalizing a cycle of reviewing new technologies, running small-scale trials or pilots, and then scaling up what actually works. Using agile project management helps here.
So it's an ongoing journey.
Definitely. These process changes are what cement the technology and the people changes into routine operations. They make these powerful innovations trusted, integrated parts of daily grid management, not just shiny new toys.
This all paints a picture of a very phased, yet really ambitious transformation. So, stepping back, what does this all mean for the strategic journey of a TSO? Let's maybe look at the tech tree, how these different capabilities kind of build upon each other in terms of maturity and impact.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. It's a clear progression, with each step really building on the last.
Okay, so where does it start?
It starts with the data foundation. That includes the data integration and standards we talked about, the information management, the common data standards like CIM and IEC 61850.
The bedrock.
Exactly. This is already at a high maturity level in many places. It has to be. It ensures interoperability, efficiency, saves costs, breaks down data silos. Without this solid foundation, everything else becomes much, much harder.
Okay, foundation first. What builds on that?
Building directly on that data is AI forecasting. This includes models like Graphcast for weather, but also other AI for load prediction or renewable output. This is pretty high maturity for weather and load, maybe medium maturity for more grid-specific machine learning applications.
And the benefit?
It leverages that solid data foundation to give major improvements in operational efficiency and reliability. It reduces uncertainty, allows for much more optimized dispatch of power plants and renewables.
Got it. Next level.
Next up is the digital grid twin for real-time simulation. This is probably at a medium to high maturity level now. It truly relies on that good data integration and accurate forecasting.
That is main role.
It optimizes grid operation and planning. It enables those real-time what-if analyses, helps avoid outages, and can potentially cut maintenance costs by predicting failures.
Okay. Then flexibility.
Then we have the demand response and flexibility platforms. Also, probably medium to high maturity in terms of the technology being available, though market integration is still evolving. These depend heavily on robust data integration and those seamless coordination processes between TSO, DSO, and market players.
And the impact here is big, right?
Huge. They deliver potentially large cost savings. Remember that $5 billion per year EU estimate and CO2 reductions. How? By substituting flexible load for expensive, often fossil-fueled peaking power plants, by deferring costly grid expansions, and by significantly reducing price volatility, it's about using what you already have much more smartly.
Makes sense. And the final frontier.
Finally, the ultimate vision really is AI-optimized grid control. You could call it the autonomous or adaptive grid. This is still at a low or maybe future maturity level. It really sits atop all the other capabilities.
What's the goal there?
The aim is for a truly self-healing, ultra-efficient grid where AI dynamically adjusts operations in milliseconds, potentially maximizing renewable penetration to near 100% someday, minimizing human error in critical situations.
Sounds amazing, but also challenging.
Extremely. While the potential impact is massive, it's also the area where you introduce the highest risk if something goes wrong. It requires extensive testing, validation, and probably significant regulatory evolution and acceptance before we see widespread deployment.
So a step-by-step journey.
Exactly. Each step brings immediate benefits and actually reduces the risks on the journey to the next, more advanced stage. It's a strategic climb, not a single risky leap.
Well, we hope this deep dive has given you, our listener, a clear, comprehensive understanding of this complex yet truly fascinating world of grid modernization.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a shortcut, we hope, to being well-informed on a topic that affects us all in our daily lives, even if, you know, we don't always see it working behind the scenes.
And to summarize, I'd say the intelligent grid is really about a holistic transformation.
Yeah.
It's not just one technology. It intertwines advanced tech with evolving human capabilities, those streamlined processes we discussed, and that absolutely critical, robust information management foundation.
Yeah.
It's a profound shift, really. Moving from simply keeping the lights on, which is already hard enough, to doing so in the most intelligent, cost-effective, and sustainable way possible.
Imagine that future where maybe your home's energy consumption actively helps prevent a widespread blackout, all orchestrated by this invisible, intelligent network working silently behind the scenes.
It's a powerful vision.
What truly stands out to you about this journey towards an intelligent grid? Thinking about everything we've covered, what new innovations might emerge when the grid can truly begin to think for itself?